Darwin, what was your role in the, did you take part in the actual suit? Were you involved in that?
Oh, yeah, I'm hoping to write it. And,
okay. Are you a lawyer?
No, I'm a sociologist.
You're going to write the suit?
Yeah, we, turns out when you're a small, poor nonprofit and you don't have $300 an hour to pay your lawyer and they're doing it pro bono, you have to put in a little more extra effort than you normally would if you were a rich oil and gas company that could just pay your lawyers to do it for you. So it's Greg Mello, our executive director, Trish Williams Mello, myself, and a few other people are actually writing the lawsuit. I don't have a formal presentation, so I kind of want to just really informally just have a conversation. So, let's see, where to begin? I'll begin with the political backstory, and then I'll talk about the story in terms of where the state of New Mexico is. And then we'll talk more about the detailed aspects of the lawsuit and the goal of stopping this particular building from being built. So the political backstory, which you know better than me because you lived through it, was once there was a Cold War and the United States had tens of thousands of nuclear weapons to deter the Soviet Union.
These dog tags were issued to me in fifth grade, living in Dallas, Texas, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, just in case our froggy little bodies got lost in the debris.
So there was that crisis. You lived through it. I didn't. I came of political age in the post-Cold War period myself. But the nuclear weapons laboratory, in 1991, the nuclear weapons laboratories began a long crisis. So the Soviet Union is gone. And they've been searching for something to do ever since. There's been a morale crisis. There's a crisis of funding. People don't think we... Some people in the government really don't think we need nuclear weapons, so why have them? So the weapons labs have been in a crisis for a long time. Some people in government think that the solution to that crisis is to flex every muscle in the nuclear weapons complex. And the only way you can do that is by designing new nuclear weapons and building new nuclear weapons, the physics packages. So you have to build plutonium pits. It's all about plutonium pits. Other people, the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, thinks that you can maintain the nuclear weapons complex by simply paying scientists a bunch of money to study what happens to nuclear weapons as they age. And so they came up with these ridiculous concepts like life extension for nuclear weapons, as though nuclear weapons are alive.
And I think Lou Hahn's used that argument to continue the proliferation, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So Lou Hahn, Bingaman, Udall would all say they support the Stockpile Stewardship Program, which involves life extension, which involves upgrades to weapons and so forth. But from my perspective, my analysis would be that there are still a lot of people in the military, in the government, the weapons laboratories, who think that and kind of know on a gut level that their enterprise, their laboratories, their industrial facilities are falling apart and will keep falling apart until they can get some sort of long-term reinvestment that flexes every muscle that allows them to build pits. Mm-hmm. So you'll remember during George W. Bush's years, there was this thing called the RNEP, the Robust Nuclear Earth Penetrator.
Mm. Yeah, during which era?
George W. Bush.
This was 2002-2003 RNEP, Robust Nuclear Earth Penetrator. And they wanted to build this new nuclear weapon that you could drop out of a bomber jet and it would go 30 meters into the ground. Bunker busters. And Congress looked at it and was like, are you kidding me? We don't need that. Really? That's really belligerent. You're crazy. So that kind of went away. Then the Bush administration cooked up something which was even crazier, right? It was called the Reliable Replacement Warhead, the RRW. The idea was... the Bush administration was going to announce that they were cutting the stockpile and eliminating several thousand weapons and reducing the arsenal from
5,500 weapons to about 1,900 weapons or something like that. And they said, well, so as we reduce the stockpile, what we'll do is we'll get rid of all of these different warhead types we have, because we have the W-76, we got the W-78, we have the W-88, we have the B-61, we have the B-83. They have all of these different kinds of bombs, and they're all basically, they all require their own special pit, plutonium pit. And so their rationale was, as well, we'll get rid of all of those and we'll replace them all with the RRW, and this will be... this will be a surefire weapon. It'll always go boom. It'll be really cheap for the complex. We'll spend half as much as we do on nuclear weapons now. This was the rationale, right? And if you believe, I mean, so you can take that at face value. Maybe some of them were genuine about it. Others may have been a little more two-faced and may have just been searching for authorization to design and build new weapons. So Congress looked at the RRW and said, are you kidding? Go away. But there was a political fight to get rid of it. So again, the new weapon, the new warhead, it's like some sort of monster. It's like a hydra, right? You chop off one head and two come back, and chop another on, six heads come back. So Congress nixed the RRW program. Which then ironically meant that the George W. Bush administration will now forever be known as the greatest disarmament presidency in the last 30 or 40 years of the United States. Because George W. Bush got rid of all of these weapons and cut nuclear weapons spending in a lot of important ways, and because he didn't get the RRW or RNEP or any of these other fancy programs... So
actually, it was a real cut.
There was actually a real cut. So it was ironic. Okay.
It was Congress that wouldn't fund it. He wanted it, right? It was just
I'm sure he did.
Bush wanted it.
Still, it was under his administration.
Pete Domenici really wanted it, or Pitt Domenicia really wanted it. And Pete didn't get it for a number of reasons. There's obviously a lot of really expensive things the United States is spending a lot of money on right now, and so even some of the more militarist hawks in the Congress, like, really, priorities here. We need to spend another couple hundred billion, maybe trillion, on Afghanistan and Iraq. Can we concentrate? So the neoconservatives had a hard time convincing everyone that a replacement warhead was needed, which brings us to hope and change. So ironically, again, President Obama, for all the good he's done, he is also poised to fund the nuclear weapons complex by more than almost any president in history, except maybe for Eisenhower and Reagan and maybe a couple other of the greats. But so there's a proposed spending increase. $80 billion is the upfront sum over the next 10 years that President Obama has pledged the Department of Energy to research nuclear warheads and to finish some capital projects that they need in order to maintain the nuclear weapons complex. And then there's another $100 billion which will go to the Pentagon to build submarines and bomber jets and ICBMs, new ones, right? So we already, so there's already 14 submarines, cruising under the oceans with over 1,000 warheads in their missiles. And the Pentagon is talking about replacing those submarines with a totally new model. So this is all very expensive, right? Obviously.
It's good for business.
Very good. The Electric Boat Company and Joseph Lieberman, where Electric Boat Company is based in Connecticut, are going to be very happy if this program is funded.
Exactly.
So the Republicans in the Senate want more than that. And it looks like the Democrats are going to give it to them, because the Democrats... So this is what I'm about to say is more subjective. This is my subjective... this is how I understand it, and you can understand it your own way. But so that's kind of some, the budgetary stuff is just kind of factual. It's out there. It's, I'm saying, my perspective is this. The Democrats believe in nuclear weapons, they want them, and they think that it should be relatively cheap to maintain and deploy them, and we probably don't need to build new nuclear weapons. Why can't we just throw a bunch of money at people with PhDs to study the ways that plutonium implodes and, you know, poke around with the facilities of the Los Alamos for another 10 or 20 years? I think that's what the Democrats think. The Republicans think that unless you build pits and build new weapons, the whole complex is going to fall apart, and that's a big problem. So the Republicans are asking for a much larger reinvestment. So the debate isn't the Democrats saying we don't need this and the Republicans saying we need this. The debate is way over to the right, and it's the Democrats saying, oh, we only need to fund the modernization of the entire nuclear weapons complex with $80 billion over the next 10 years to build an entire new suite of plutonium facilities at Los Alamos, Savannah River, a uranium enrichment facility that is larger than the entire Iranian commercial nuclear energy program, just at Y-12, mind you. So the Republicans are saying we need many tens of billions of dollars for these capital infrastructure projects to build new plutonium pits and create new weapons-grade material. And the Democrats are saying, well, we do need a bunch, but we don't need that much. So the debate is very skewed over to the right. This is where...
Like every other debate in this country right now.
Exactly. Like every debate in this country around healthcare, schools, every debate in this country is skewed far to the right. So New Mexico is at the center of all of this for one obvious reason, right? Los Alamos National Laboratory and Sandia National Laboratories are the brain center of the nuclear weapons complex, and Los Alamos particularly is the plutonium center. So Los Alamos is at the, it's the fulcrum, or it's the crux, or it's the crossroads, the very center of the nexus where all of these points come together. Los Alamos is the most important place in the nuclear weapons complex. In congressional testimony to the Senate Energy and Water Appropriations Committee, in an essay, officials have said, of all of the capital projects that they want to see funded to restart the nuclear weapons complex, what they want the most is the CMRR facility at Los Alamos, the most important single facility for the nuclear weapons program.
Who wants that? The N?
Yeah, the National Nuclear Security Administration, which is the successor to the Atomic Energy Commission. They are the nuclear weapons physics package people. They make the bomb, and they're very clear about it. The most important thing is the CMRR facility. Why is that? So,
yeah.
Los Alamos Lab on the Pajarito Plateau. So if you drive up to Los Alamos, right, you can take you can swing a left and go to White Rock, and then cut up Pajarito Road, and you've probably done it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come up Pajarito Road, you come out of the canyon, you're up on the mesa, and if you look off to your right as you're coming through the lab, there's all these buildings. One of them is PF4. PF4 is the plutonium facility. That is where Los Alamos currently manufactures plutonium pits. They are manufacturing plutonium pits at PF4 already.
About 11 a year?
Yeah, a handful, and then they certify them. And so I think it was 2006 or 2007, Los Alamos spent $1 billion on a pit, on a piece of plutonium like this, $1 billion to manufacture it, and then to like churn it out, and then to certify it. And then they put out this press release, like this grand announcement, like, look what we did. We certified a pit. This pit could go into a bomb, and it would definitely go boom. Money well spent.
Where's the plutonium coming from?
The plutonium is... The United States has a lot of plutonium already.
Mm-hmm.
So the plutonium came out of commercial and defense reactors.
Mm-hmm.
from the 1950s through the 1980s. Mm-hmm. There's just tons of it. It's
all over the country. Where
it's in surplus. It's stored in different sites.
Is there some at Kirtland?
There are in the bombs at Kirtland. There's like 2,000-something nuclear weapons.
A mined thing?
It's an isotope.
Yeah.
Of uranium, right?
Yeah, the uranium is mined.
Right.
Which
the byproduct of the nuclear uranium industry.
And then they burn.
Exactly.
They burn.
And that's the most important point. Every time you build a nuclear power plant, you're creating a weapons-grade plutonium manufacturing facility.
Oh.
So every time one of these goes up, we've got more plutonium in the world, and the temptation, if it's there,
like...
people are going to take advantage of it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I was looking at a map of Pakistan the other night. I was amazed at how many nuclear power plants I found on that map.
It's India.
It's out of control.
The United States has a nuclear energy deal with India.
Yeah.
And so the United States is essentially helping India with its commercial, but that's directly facilitating the Indian capacity to produce plutonium for their weapons program. Nuclear energy equals materials that can be used in nuclear weapons. So the United States has more plutonium. So when I said this weird hearing I went to the other night, plutonium surplus, plutonium disposition, because we have a surplus, right? We have so much plutonium, we don't know what to do with it. Gosh, what should we do?
Where was it?
It was in Santa Fe. It was a strange event.
This gets more absurd.
Yes, exactly.
The United States has a lot of plutonium. Here's the absurd thing. If you took a couple pounds of plutonium and took it up into the atmosphere and just blew it up and spread it out into the atmosphere, theoretically you'd give everyone on Earth cancer.
Which is probably what happened when that little satellite hit the atmosphere in 1969.
Yeah,
can't remember what it was. P-138 had a plutonium reactor in it and spread a thin layer of plutonium over the entire envelope.
We all have
our Earth's atmosphere. God only knows what the results were. There certainly is a lot of cancer these days.
But that would explain why they find traces on mountaintops and stuff out in the middle of nowhere,
yeah.
Right?
There's naturally occurring background radiation everywhere. So if you just took a Geiger counter and held it out, it would tick. And part of it is like background radiation from the cosmos. Part of it is from nuclear weapons testing that happened in the 1950s and 60s.
Took out John Wayne.
It's tick 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 because it's now just in the biosphere. It's out there. The United States has tons of plutonium. There are tons, and I'm not saying tons figuratively, like a lot. I mean that tons, like metric tons, thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of plutonium exist, and some of it's at Los Alamos. There's part of it's at the Livermore Labs in California, in the they have a vault there, and it's like a super facility. Savannah Riverside. So there's plutonium all over. Los Alamos, the PF4 building at Los Alamos, that's where they manufacture plutonium pits right now. They do other things in PF4. They do things they won't tell us about in PF4. They do really special, creepy things in PF4. One of the things they do is they have a program called Appaloosa. It's also known as the Bolas Grande program, big balls. They have these big spheres, these giant containment vessels of steel, and they're hollow inside, and they're like many inches thick of steel. And they put plutonium in the middle, and they blow it up. And then the plutonium gets embedded like an inch or more into the steel. And the only reason they do this is to study the criticality and make sure that the nuclear weapons are certifiable, and they go boom. They do things like that in PF4, and they've done it in other buildings. They do some plutonium work in other buildings. But it's that Pajarito Mesa area, it's called Technical Area 55,
right.
And that's where the plutonium work is going on. The CMRR fits there. In this respect,
where there was arrest just a couple weeks ago, the CMR building. How's that related to what you're talking about?
It's the CMR building,
the
was
existing CMR.
Yeah, that was built in the early 50s, and it's been there a long time, and it's huge. And they have hot cells. They have different wings to that building, and each wing has a function. They have hot cells where they can handle really deadly stuff. plutonium, stuff that glows and emits gamma radiation and could really...
So they're not making the pits there.
No. Okay. But when Los Alamos says this facility, the CMRR or the CMR or the, you know, when they say a facility isn't manufacturing plutonium pits, that's kind of like if you went to the Coca-Cola bottling plant and say they had like a big building over there, and that's the building where they, I don't know, have a generator and it pressurizes and creates steam and air, and then it comes into the bottling plant where they then use that to bottle the Coca-Cola. And they would say, well, that building's not involved in Coca-Cola bottling. We don't bottle Coca-Cola in that building. Okay. Yeah, so it's a factory, right? And any...
You need each part, yeah.
Any factory is complex and has multiple buildings with different functions. PF4... That's the assembly line where they will make the pits. The CMRR building, which is not yet completed, will be connected to the plutonium facility through an underground tunnel. And in CMRR, they will have a 6-ton vault for plutonium or plutonium equivalent nuclear materials. And when they say plutonium equivalent, that's kind of a hint that we plan on doing some other creepy stuff in the building that we're not going to tell you about. But the CMRR is kind of like it's an annex. It's a necessary piece of a larger puzzle they're trying to put together to create the floor space and the facility space to manufacture upwards of maybe 125, maybe 200, maybe 400 pits per year.
Oh my God.
They want to make a lot. And
who's the they?
The they is, yeah, this is a com.
That's a good question.
This is a complex question, too. The they is Los Alamos.
The lab itself.
And the self-contained administrative and senior-level management culture at the lab that has been embedded in the lab for decades, they have been the most effective lobbyist for nuclear weapons spending and against arms control treaties since the 1950s. Los Alamos Lab.
Who runs that lab now?
UC used to run it. University of California used to run it.
Bechtel
runs it now.
But I mean, UC's still involved, right?
UC's still involved. So, and to say that there is not really a fine line dividing Bechtel and the UC. So if you go to the UC Berkeley campus, there's a hall on the UC Berkeley campus called the Stephen Bechtel Hall. And that's where that's the building where UC Berkeley, I think it's their geophysics program is, and they have scientific facilities inside. And so...
And Lawrence Livermore is still run by UC, right?
Lawrence Livermore is also run by Bechtel.
Always by Bechtel.
With UC also. So
this is our UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they receive...
Oh, no. UC.
Yeah, the University of California. So here's another backstory. This is a total... This is really important to understand who they is. Mm-hmm. So the University of California Board of Regents... has always represented the economic elite of the state of California. When the institution was founded in 1868, the first board of regents was composed of bankers, mining corporation executives, cattle barons, and lawyers, mostly based in the San Francisco Bay Area and its hinterlands. And then so as the California economy developed and changed, the Board of Regents changed. So if you look at the Board of Regents running up to World War II and up until about the 1960s, it's run by oil industry executives. And it's also run by the people who, yeah, manufactured warships for the U.S. Navy during World War II. After World War II, the Board of Regents is basically taken over by people based out of San Diego and Los Angeles who make nuclear missile technology for the United States. The University of California is a liberal institution. It's kind of like a newspaper, right? Like the Albuquerque Journal. There's some reporters there who are, you know, they're pretty liberal and open-minded, and they want to write about business from a critical perspective, but the journal itself owns real estate in Albuquerque and is a real estate corporation. So University of California is kind of like that. There's some professors there. Like I went to UC and taught at UC Santa Barbara for a while, and I'm clearly not in line with the military industry. But the chancellor of UC Santa Barbara is, his engineering career was spent making, airfoils for jets and missiles. So that's what the university is, right? So
they're the
day. Well, that's kind of not to mention British Petroleum's $500 million contribution to the Lawrence Labs.
Yeah, Berkeley Labs.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Which is connected.
Totally connected.
Totally connected. That's why they came up with the idea that, oh yeah, we've dispersed this oil down in the Gulf. So the Lawrence Labs are supporting the British Petroleum point of view, you know, and with $500 million, you know, you can buy somebody's goodwill.
Yeah, BP bought
an institute
on campus at Berkeley. They gave Berkeley $500 million and bought a biofuels institute, and half of the staff at the biofuels institute are BP staff members on the campus. So the UC is a large parastatal corporation run by California's financial elite.
Hooligans. Amen, sister.
Yes. Hooligans.
I mean, it's the same thing. UC Davis is basically run by the big ag business.
Same thing,
all
military.
Private.
Right, Stanford's a military.
Stanford, and Stanford is also linked very closely to Bechtel. Okay. And Stanford, I mean, this goes so deep.
Those are the elite families, you know, that like from way back.
Yeah.
Stanford is key because here's where it gets really weird. So in 2002, the Bush administration again said, gosh, this whole University of California running the labs thing really isn't working. Let's privatize. Let's open the management contract up and see what happens. So they bid out the contract for the weapons laboratories. And University of Texas, of course, stepped in and said, we want to run the labs and we're going to partner with Lockheed Martin Corporation. And the University of California was like, oh, gosh, this university with direct political ties to the George W. Bush administration is going to try to take over the lab from us. This sucks. What are we going to do? So the UC said, well, let's one-up them. Let's pick the biggest, most secretive, craziest Republican corporation on the planet, Bechtel. So the president of the UC, and I only know this because I did a Public Records Act request and got his calendar for a couple years. But there was a day in early 2003, he got on the BART, the train, and he goes under the bay from Oakland, where the UCOP headquarters is, and he comes up in the financial district of San Francisco, and he gets off, and he meets up with the university's lawyer, and he meets up with Gerald Parsky, who is George W. Bush's campaign chair in California for the two elections, and they walk into the Bechtel Corporation headquarters on Beale Street, and they sit down and have a meeting with Riley Bechtel, and that's where they consummate the deal of UC Bechtel, and they create Los Alamos National Security and Lawrence Livermore National Security LLC, and the board of directors of Lance and LINS, as they call them, the limited liability corporations, is composed of William Perry, who the former defense secretary. He was a Clinton defense secretary. He is a fellow of the Hoover Institute at Stanford, and one of the more important links. This may seem really random, but it gets back to the Pitt thing. Joe Martz, one of the guy who ran Los Alamos's Pitt program for years, left Los Alamos a couple years ago to become the, quote, William Perry Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institute, where he is studying what is known as capabilities-based deterrence, which means manufacturing new pits.
Big bombs. Deterrence, defense. Anytime you hear those words, you know they're talking about making new weapons.
Yeah.
It's like
What happened to Matt?
And that's what becomes so difficult about convincing the American people, because you keep using that word. Well, it's a deterrent.
Yeah, safety.
Safety.
Safety, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're scared.
Well, they just keep that fear level. Mm-hmm. Fear level orange.
That's red. Out of control.
All right.
All right, get your duct tape.
Yeah.
the new duck and cover. So that's kind of who the they is. And it's even muddier than that, right? So there's... So it's, some people are motivated by sheer economics. Like, I want to say confidently that, in all honesty, the Bechtel Corporation is mostly motivated by it. The profit it's seeking. The fee, management fee for the lab, something like $78 million a year. And then that's spread out over a, it's been a long time since I looked at this, but a mini-year operating contract, which can be renewed. So it ends up being a $500 million management contract, performance fee that they can get. Other parties involved in this are motivated by ideology. They honestly believe in nuclear weapons. They support nuclear weapons. They think that deterrence works. So they want to reinvest in and maintain the U.S. nuclear weapons complex far into the future for those reasons. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different motivations mm-hmm. going on, and it can be difficult to unpack, which brings us to New Mexico. So, again, Los Alamos is the center, that Pajarito corridor area up there where PF4 is, where they want to put the CMR facility, where they have the R-Lube, where they have the radioactive liquid waste treatment facility, which, by the way, dumps into one of the canyons up there, the effluent, where they have a transuranic waste facility where they package transuranic waste to ship to WIPP, where they have a number of other facilities where they mess around with plutonium to support this pit production mission. That's the center of the U.S. nuclear weapons complex at this point, and that's the center of the fight. So this little thing here, this article, the title's kind of funny, Green Sue to Stop New Plutonium Plant at Los Alamos Lab.
Well, it's from the Energy Daily, so they had to tie it in, right?
Right. It must be from Mars.
So the Energy Daily is a trade publication that, if say you run Bechtel, you read Energy Daily, because it's like, oh, look, XL slashing coal plant fleet, dash to gas. Let's build that gas plant for them, you know? So people like that read Energy Daily. So this article kind of explains, this is the best article yet that's come out about the lawsuit that we recently filed. Yeah, ironically enough. The suit itself, let's see, you have a number of attachments here. This is the letter of intent to sue. This is not the suit. The lawsuit is online at our website, though, so you can download it if you want. This is the letter of intent, and it's truncated, but it more or less gives you a very concise summary of the argument, the technical argument we're making against the construction of this facility. Then you've got, if you flip a few pages, and you've got this map.
CC, I like that.
All right, we CC'd like everybody. yeah, because that's the thing. Barack Obama and Vice President Biden are personally lobbying Republican senators. Barack Obama and Joe Biden are personally lobbying Democratic senators of their own party to fund construction of this building. And John Kyle, the Republican whip of the Senate, and Mitch McConnell and others, the Republican Senate leaders, are calling, they're the ones who are giving these marching orders to the president and the vice president. Now, if that sounds weird, it should, right? The minority party is telling the president and the vice president what to lobby their own senators to do. To fund this facility.
They can approve the funding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. True. So
they're basically threatening, if they don't do that, then they'll stop all these other things that
Yeah, the Republican.
Like it's a blackmail, right?
Yeah, it's a blackmail, and one of the political dysfunctions of our day and age is the idea that it's your intentions that matter, not your actions. And so there's this there's this thing, the New START Treaty, New START. It's a new arms control agreement. It says it's between the United States and Russia. It says the United States and Russia will reduce their nuclear arsenals to 1,550 nuclear weapons, no more than 700 platforms. So you can have 1,550 nuclear bombs or warheads, and you can put them onto 700 missiles launched from subs or out of bunkers in North Dakota, or you can drop them out of airplanes. So you can have 700 of the platforms, 1,550 of the warheads. This is the agreement. And to ratify that agreement, President Obama and Vice President Biden are lobbying the Democratic senators to approve this massive funding increase for the nuclear weapons complex in order to buy the votes of the Republican senators, who will not allow the treaty to be ratified unless this money is spent in the complex. That's the deal.
And they haven't guaranteed that they will ratify it anyway. They're just like, well, we'll think about it once you've
agreed to
done
do this.
This and this and this and this and this. Then we'll consider it.
Then we'll
consider not blocking ratification by filibustering. And
what is Obama's and his administration's motivation? I mean,
the START treaty itself.
Is it
just that? It seems like it's got to be more, because it's not even that great of a treaty.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible treaty. So the START treaty does not actually require disarmament on any significant scale, because here's the thing. A B-2 bomber can carry up to 20 nuclear bombs or cruise missiles. In the START treaty accounting, a B-2 bomber counts as one nuclear weapon. So when you say you're limited to 700 platforms, something like 60 of those platforms are going to be bomber jets capable of carrying nuclear missiles. And they're counted as 60 warheads, but they're capable of carrying hundreds of warheads. So when you actually look at the math of the START Treaty, there's not actually – the disarmament requirement is something like 198 warheads that you actually have to get rid of. And again, the irony, going back to Bush, Bush already dismantled most of those.
Oh, man.
So the treaty is mostly optics. It doesn't actually –
reduce anything.
Yes, it doesn't actually in any meaningful way reduce the threat of nuclear weapons.
It's just a different way of counting them, basically. It's the same weapons counted a different way. It's an old game, isn't it?
The warheads on nuclear submarines are capable of targeting, what, up to 10 targets?
Yeah, so
you can correct me if I'm wrong.
You've got MIRV warheads. Uh-huh. Now, the decent thing about the treaty is that it does say if you can put 3 warheads on a missile, then that counts as 3 weapons. But the bomber issue is disingenuous. And the START treaty, now if you're really cynical like me, you would say this. The START treaty is about several things. It's about getting a foreign policy win for the Democratic Party to boost them in the elections this fall, which has now failed, because unless the Senate Foreign Relations Committee approves the treaty and lets it go to a vote in the full Senate on September 15th, then it's not going to be voted on this year or ratified. And that's very unlikely that that's going to happen, because there may not be a budget for this year. And if there's not a budget, why would John Kyle and the Republican senators believe the Obama administration when they say, yeah, it's cool, we're going to give you $90 billion for these capital projects you want if you vote for our treaty? So this is all very unlikely to happen. That's the political calculus. It's it's kind of, I want to say it's sad because we're about to be saddled with the $4 billion plutonium pit factory in New Mexico for a treaty that doesn't do anything, in a political deal that likely won't even help the Democrats. I do want to see the Democrats maintain control of the House and Senate. I am afraid of Republicans. I'm very afraid of Republicans. I want to see Obama in control of the White House after the next election. But it's sad because this political deal, it's not clear that it's even gonna help that anymore. And the Democrats have already given away so much. So
it just seems like that's too simple. I mean, really, the foreign policy, the potential for a foreign policy victory made it worth. I mean, what were they thinking?
Well, they're also thinking. Some of the Democrats are also thinking, gosh, wouldn't it be nice to allow Israel to bomb Iranian nuclear facilities? Or maybe.
So the
United States can't very well go around the planet screaming bloody murder about proliferation of nuclear weapons if the United States is perceived as possessing a lot of nuclear weapons and making no commitment toward eventual disarmament. Mm-hmm. So, again, if you're cynical like me, you would say that there is a concerted political strategy on the part of some Republicans and some Democrats to create the impression that the United States is committed to nuclear disarmament so that the United States can do things like attack North Korea, attack Iran, attack Syria, attack any other nation that basically pull a replay of what happened with Iraq in 2003 to say they have weapons of mass destruction, they seek them, and we're going to get rid of them. And we're going to go in there and create regime change. So,
okay, now when you say that they, it's all the same players, Bechtel and
so,
the weapons industry, the manufacturing.
Well, the military-industrial complex
worldwide has
evolved. To this.
All those people benefit. All those corporations benefit.
Yeah.
Well, so if you're Bechtel, you probably don't mind India having nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, because that's a big market, and India could build 5, 10, 15, 20 nuclear power plants in the next 20 years, and Bechtel would love to build some of them. But if you're Bechtel, you probably don't want to see Iran go nuclear in any significant way, because A, it's kind of small market, and B, gosh, wouldn't the profit flow be a lot better for us if we got to build pipelines out of the Central Asian region for oil? And gosh, isn't one of the convenient covers to say maybe go in and bomb some of these countries to smithereens and rebuild them? Isn't that a great cover to say that they're proliferating nuclear weapons? Mm-hmm. Let's go get them. And now the United States controls a large portion of the Middle East and Central Asia. So
soften them up, put in a puppet government that will.
Right. We've never seen this before, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's happening right now in Iraq. It's happening
in
Afghanistan.
All the stuff they just found out where that they've known there's been in Afghanistan.
Yes.
The resources.
Yes.
You know, it all really comes down to
resources
and cheap labor.
It does. And there are people who would accuse us of being, like, crude economic determinist or Marxist or some heaven forbid or something like that. But really, when they named it Operation Iraqi Liberation. Oil? Come on. I mean, you're kind of tipping your hand there. In a big way. So, and that gets to what, nuclear weapons are not important, right? The real story isn't about nuclear weapons, right?
No.
It's actually about controlling the economy and the resources of the world. And let's go to let's talk about New Mexico, because to talk about development and controlling the future, what's possible, the resources, the labor, this facility they're going to build up there on the hill, this is a big deal. This little map here, you can see TA-55. It's kind of, there is no middle to Los Alamos. It's sprawling and weird, but you'll see it in there, and it's up the Pajarito Road. That's the plutonium facility. Then on the next page, you've got a photograph. Mm-hmm. So the photograph, you see, there's the existing plutonium facility. It looks like a gigantic Walmart or something. Then there's a building called the CMRR Radiological Laboratory Utility Office Building. Mm-hmm. And if you work for the Nuclear Enterprise, you like big, long acronyms that are like quite a mouthful. Mm-hmm. And you like to come up with funny little words for them. So they call that the RULOB or the RLUB, mm-hmm. depending on what you want to call it. And then you'll see the CMRR Nuclear Facility is... and it's pointing to like a big empty lot with like a couple trailers and stuff on it. That's where they want to build... the nuclear facility.
That's the 4.5 million billion.
Yes, that'll be the 4.5. So the RLUB is built. That's a done deal. That's built. It cost them 170 something million to build the building. It's going to cost them 190 something million to stick the stuff, the glove boxes, the equipment in the build. So it's to outfit the building, it costs more than building the building. That building is only allowed to have kilograms of plutonium or plutonium equivalent material in it. So it's a radiological lab. That building is allowed to have lots of very toxic and hazardous chemical waste. So this is not a light lab. Oh, just a couple kilograms of plutonium. It's a very dangerous facility with some gnarly stuff going on in it. That building is built. The next slide is... this is the CMRR nuclear facility, the building that isn't built. We didn't create this. This is Los Alamos' slide. But CD stands for critical decision. And what they've done here... so the thing is... this building, they proposed building it in like 1999. They wrote an environmental impact statement in 2003, and they've budgeted money for it ever since, more or less. And the building is now 10 years late. It's the cost inflation has gone from less than it's gone from about 300 something million to like 4 something billion now. So it's,
and that's not a final cost.
No. So they have no final cost. They do not even have a preliminary design for the building, let alone a final design. That's why this very complex and weird. So what you see going on here, they've split, the project is so complex and so out of control, they've split it into multiple parts. They've split it into 5 parts. The first part, the design infrastructure and infrastructure package construction. Design Pajarito Road relocation, which, by the way, the road relocation is a big deal. So they've got all these like sliding various construction packages to facilitate.
In other words, their argument is that they can't really design the next phase until they finish one phase. That's why they can't. Why don't they say, well, let's design it all and then come up with a total bill? Is it political, or is it actually there? Are they making an engineering argument?
Am I allowed to swear? You can beat this out. It's a clusterfuck.
Which is really prominent in our society right yes. now. I mean, if you want to get away with something, say Wall Street, just make the deal so complicated nobody can understand. and you're cloaking yourself in a stealth-like atmosphere that people can't deal with because they can't comprehend what you're doing.
That's what they've done with their, quote, NEPA analysis for this building. So you're required to analyze the environmental impacts of a project. They've cloaked that in uber complexity. It's impossible to tell what they're actually talking about. Now, the actual design complexity of the building, the reason it's split into these 5 parts and it's so complex and they're doing different things, they would actually... like for it to be simple. But here's the problem. When you're going to build a defense nuclear facility with 6 metric tons of plutonium in a vault, and you're going to have huge glove boxes where you're going to manipulate plutonium and a tunnel connecting to the factory where you're going to, your foundry for the pits, you think, that's a complex, that's a dangerous building. And you're going to have a lot of safety systems built into it. When they originally designed this building, They designed it as an above ground building. They designed the foundation and the walls for it were not really all that thick in terms of concrete and steel. So, for instance, if there, this is a hypothetical, right? But if there were people willing to fly planes into buildings for ideological reasons, might be a problem, right? To have a building like this with tons of plutonium in it that a 747 could fly into, and it would cause a lot of problems. It might also be a problem if there were an earthquake fault beneath the building capable of shaking it to like a 7-point whatever magnitude
quake. Of course, seven earthquake faults are, you know.
There is.
It's a hugely unstable area.
Might be a problem if under the building there was an unconsolidated volcanic layer of volcanic ash that if the building was sitting on top of it and there were an earthquake, it would, in the words of some government officials, slide off into the canyon, the building. Might be a problem for a nuclear facility, right? It might be a problem. So there were a number of things that happened to their project that made it more complex. They also did not design the building to NQA standards, quality assurance standards. So they were gonna go, I mean, this is not exactly how it is, but they were going to go to Home Depot and buy like duct and piping and, you know, electrical wire and stuff. And just install that. And so what if it's made in China? Or, you know, we can't really source the product. I mean, they designed this building very sloppy from the very beginning. And there's a safety board, the Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board. Their whole goal is to make defense nuclear facilities safe. Imagine that. And they came along and said, gosh, you know, this is a really dangerous building, and you guys are making it into, like, basically a death trap. And we want you to do some things to change the building. So,
now, who was it that came in and said that?
Defense Nuclear Facility Safety Board and DNFSB and other people who aren't willing to look the other way while the lab does crazy things. So some members of Congress, and in fact, Congress even blocked funding of this facility last year or 2 years ago, I forget which it was, until the DNFSB certified the building as safe, the design. It's been certified, but so here's
the building's not even designed yet. No.
Yeah, the preliminary design's not even done yet.
That part. That's
bizarre, really, right?
Isn't that interesting? That?
So they have this kind of lightweight building above ground, and so gosh, people fly planes into buildings. Well, let's put the building below ground. Well, now that it's below ground, it's too close to this layer of goo that'll just, you know, shake and fall apart and slide off. So what are we going to do? So then they decided that they had to literally dig out the entire mesa all the way to the bottom and remove an entire geologic stratum of material. And fill that with concrete. And they're going to fill it with about 1/9 the amount of concrete that went into Hoover Dam.
Oh.
It's
isn't it a special kind of concrete too? Or
it's lean concrete, and then they might use soil grout, which soil grouting, you drill into the earth and then you inject at really high velocity, you inject cement into the soil and it mixes into it and it creates soilcrete or something like that. Mm-hmm. They might do that. It says 225,000 cubic yards of concrete.
Over a billion pounds, right?
Maybe. I've not done
that.
Rick
said that. Yeah.
Then it's probably true. There's a lot of concrete that they're going to pour into the building. The building now is we've been so concerned with the construction impacts because they've changed so much. When they designed the building and when they did the EIS in 2003, above ground building, it's going to use 6,000 cubic yards of concrete. This is our handy dandy table that explains to you how much this thing has changed. Yeah, 6,000 yards of concrete. Now it's going to use 347,000 cubic yards of concrete, 55 times the original. And the original estimate, 6,000, was for both of the buildings.
And it's going to employ 844 people.
Yeah, they're going to spend $4.5 billion and employ maybe Well, they're going to employ at the peak. The peak employment in the EIS said 300. Recently, they said 844 and maybe 1,000 people.
Is that a New Mexico contractor?
No.
Okay, here's another important issue. So when you're building in, when you're building a nuclear facility, you cannot just hire Joe Schmo to weld the ducts. And you have to hire a worker who is certified, who's gone through schooling. You have to hire a company that's certified. All the parts have to be sourced. So the it's likely that the contracts and the work itself is going to go, and these are the most high-paying jobs, too, to out-of-state workers. This is why they're talking about building temporary housing for a lot of the workers who are going to come in on this project.
It just gets worse.
So they were going to build this building for maybe 34 months. Now it's going to take 144 months to build this building. But you can sort of look at this in your own leisure, and it's all just kind of clear. And again, this table, so we made the Los Alamos Study Group made the table, but the data, this is all their data.
Right.
And the sources are published there at the bottom.
You know. Once the suit is filed, which it was.
Yes, it's filed.
Can it stop the project?
Yes, that's the thing. Okay. So NEPA, National Environmental Protection Act, requires that federal agencies, when a federal agency is going to pursue a significant action that could have effects on the environment, they need to prepare an EIS. They prepared an EIS for the project in 2003, and it said all of these things which are totally irrelevant now and not true. And when a project changes significantly, which is what this table demonstrates, when the circumstances in which a decision is made to build a project changes significantly, then you have to reassess the project and you may have to write a new EIS. So the lawsuit that we have filed says you need to write a new EIS. That requires stopping the project, not spending any more money on it, definitely not moving ahead with the infrastructure package construction, which is that hole digging, concrete pouring fiasco. So,
and an EIS would have to show different alternatives. You'd have to show that.
Yes.
Whereas originally they were talking about a $300 million facility, so the alternatives were in that.
Yes. And so when they said, like, gosh, it would be too expensive to retrofit the existing CMR building. It would be too expensive. It would cost $500 million to fix up the CMR building to maintain the capabilities we have to experiment with plutonium. And that's cost prohibitive. We just may as well build the new CMRR.
At billion.
But they didn't. Say but at the time, it's cheaper than $500 million or whatever they said retrofitting the CMR building would be. So the circumstances have totally changed. There are political circumstances which have changed. President Obama is on record as saying, we seek disarmament. Well, why are we building a $4.5 billion pit factory?
Have you got a prize for that?
Yeah. Our president, and this is, the guy deserves to be commended. He has vision, and he's seeking disarmament. So let's make it happen.
Right.
Let's do this. The scientifically, we know a lot more about plutonium now than we did in 2003. We know, for example, that the 15,000 pits we have in storage, these are our surplus pits for nuclear weapons that are just sitting in bunkers in Texas. Those are going to be good for decades and decades and decades. So why build a building right now to manufacture those things if they're going to be good far into the future? So we know things like that now that we didn't quite know then. So in an essay, in my opinion, if I were the judge, I would just say stop the project, reassess it. And the key thing is, the alternatives, right? So when you start a new EIS, this is why we don't want a supplemental EIS. There's nothing to supplement here. The project is totally different.
So you want a new
EIS from the very beginning. And that includes scoping, which... Again, was this thing. And
public meetings.
Yes. Sure. And the public meetings and scoping process is the purpose of it is so that we help determine the alternatives that are discussed. Mm-hmm. So when NNSA come when they consider alternatives to their projects, they have a tendency to so for the CMRR EIS that was written in 2003, they considered something like more than 30 versions of building the plutonium facility, the CMRR nuclear facility, or not building it. Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of set of alternatives is that? they didn't consider things like, why don't we retrofit the CMR building and shrink the footprint and stop doing all of these other crazy testing and programmatic things that aren't really important. They didn't consider real alternatives. So scoping would allow us to go back and say, here's a whole set of alternatives that you need to consider. And some of them are going to be outside the agency's mm-hmm. ability to act. Which
And one thing it seems like it would make sense to do is to follow up on their claims that this is all needed for disarmament purposes. So then let's get clear on each project that you're proposing. How is that serving disarmament purpose? And, you know, it's been really easy for them to just throw it around and go, well, you know, we need the expertise. The people need to know how to make them in order to know how to unmake them or whatever. So we need to make some more to know. You know, it's just double speak. It's all this. Yeah. But that would be one really good angle is like you're talking about disarmament. These need to meet a certain standard of what is disarmament. So that needs to be defined.
Disarmament as a process is going to be... Our position is basically that disarmament is going to be more about disinvesting economically in nuclear weapons and putting that money into something different. So anyone who says in order to disarm we must spend more on nuclear weapons, it should just be clearly there's a problem with your brain.
Yeah, you should need to get that's what I think.
You need to get checked out.
Yeah.
But that is the industry line. This woman from Geneva that I was talking to at the NPT in New York, I've forgotten her name right now, but she wasn't the highest up, Susan Burke. She was one of the other ambassadors or whatever. She said disarmament is really expensive. Mm-hmm. It just is. And I love Alice Slater's idea. Well, she's like, just throw them all in a vat of molasses. I mean, that would do it. Like, she's talked to nuclear scientists that said that would do it. That would, like, gum things up. They would not be operable. Yeah. It's that easy.
But, you know, she's right when she says that disarmament is going to be costly because, it's going to cost these American corporations their profit line because they're making money doing this. And that's where their vested interests lie. Just as the oil companies... investment in oil-powered economies is continuing because they don't want to let go of the profit they're making off of it. They're not going to consider an alternative, not while they're making money.
Yeah, so costly to who is the question.
Right. Well, one of the things that I had heard you on the radio at some point, and you were talking about the stimulus money.
Yeah.
And how much, I mean, just that because that site you can go is just unbelievable. It's like clearly right there, and so much of that money has gone to these corporations to do, it's all Department of Energy, but like who in the Department of Energy is that money going to?
Well, I think something like, 73% of the American government's energy budget has gone to nuclear power over the last few decades. Is that correct? I've seen a chart.
Yeah, it would be loan guarantees. The vast majority of loan guarantees go to nuclear energy plants because Wall Street doesn't believe in nuclear energy because it's
too dangerous.
It's too stupid. Like, why on earth am I going to put up $1 billion of my private capital to build a plant that if it goes
so the government
boom,
does it.
So we do it. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, the stimulus money. Right.
Yeah. Well, the stimulus money, it was proposed to actually use stimulus funds to design nuclear weapons. The study group and other organizations made us think about that. We told people, we basically helped alert members of Congress and the press that was being considered. So that was nixed. But the 9 of the 10 largest stimulus contracts nationwide are for nuclear weapons waste cleanup.
Right.
In the United States.
It's unbelievable. You go to that website and there it is. It's just in black and white. And it's not even hidden.
So disarmament is expensive. Yeah, it'll be expensive also in a sense that disarmament as a process will probably need to include cleaning up the dumping grounds. And so Los Alamos, the fanfare that they've gotten for this stimulus money they're using to clean up pollution there, we're talking about they're using hundreds of millions of dollars up there to dig up waste that was produced during the Manhattan Project. They make the CMRR nuclear facility will create thousands of metric tons of waste.
New waste.
And they're still dumping waste. They're not talking about cleaning that up. This MOX thing again, is, like Francine said, this is being portrayed by DOE and contractors as a solution to nuclear terrorism and the threat that all this loose plutonium out there creates. MOX fuel actually creates more plutonium. Mm-hmm. It actually creates more waste, more hazardous waste.
That little detail out.
It's expensive. Yeah. It's a boondoggle. So getting back to scoping and the new EIS for the facility, the reason to stop the CMRR and open up scoping is to have the debate about the future of our state's economy that we need to have. This is not about nuclear ultimately, it's really not about nuclear weapons. It's not about, that's too abstract. It's not about the nuclear threat or proliferation or anything like that.
It's about priorities.
Yeah, it's about priorities. Absolutely. It's about, let's get $4.5 billion for our schools. Let's get $4.5 billion for new energy
sources,
wind and solar and geothermal. Let's get billions of dollars or hundreds of millions for New Mexico to create jobs, weatherizing. Let's do that. So that's the debate we want to have at the end of the day.
Well, you know, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but the reality is much of this money that's coming in is federal dollars.
Yes.
And so federal dollars, if doesn't come into that lab, won't necessarily come to the state.
It could,
yes. But it's not necessarily.
Jeff Bingaman runs the Senate Energy and Water Appropriations Committee.
Right.
So if he's not getting billions of dollars for plutonium infrastructure at Los Alamos, I don't see why he could not get billions of dollars for energy, for water development, for things that New Mexico needs that will create jobs with dignity for the hordes of unemployed people in the state. Right. I want to see him answer that question. Why can't he do that?
Extensive discussion followed Darwin's presentation. It centered around who to contact to urge a full environmental impact statement and how different governmental bodies, including cities, counties, and Indian tribes, could support the lawsuit and also urge a full environmental impact report. Comments should be sent to Stephen Cho, head of the Energy Department. Additional information can be obtained by going to the Los Alamos Study Group's website. That's lasg.org. This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy reporting.